Okay, we're on Daf Samach Chet today. I'll begin on Samach Zayin. I'm with Beis, a few lines from the bottom. So the Gemara is in the middle of a sugya dealing with tzedaka. I'll begin three lines from the bottom. The Gemara says, Rabbi Abba, Habatzir Zuzay Besudre, Beshadibli Lachore. Rabbi Abba, he wanted to give tzedaka, but he didn't want to know who the recipients were. So he'll give, he won't know who the recipients are. The recipients to know who the donor is, which is a level with tzedaka. So Rabbi, he would wrap the money, besudre, in the kerchief, whatever. Like the, he says, shadi le lachorei, and like, throw it behind him, like a knapsack. Umamsi nafshe le bayaniyei, and then he would arrange himself that he'd be near the aniyim. Umetzali enei miramai, he would like slant his eyes to keep an eye on who the ramayim are, so that the swindlers wouldn't be able to get the money. It's a little difficult to understand because if he's not seeing who's, how could he see the swindlers and not see who the aniyim are? So I was talking to Rabbi Roblowski today, and I saw this in the Masifta. So one svara is that he really did see who was taking it, but they thought he didn't. They didn't see. In other words, they wanted the misimpression that he didn't see. That's one. See, the Gemara in Baba Batra says, Rabbi Abba is an example, the person who gives, and the recipient knows who's giving it from, but the donor doesn't know who he's giving to. But this would say that they thought he didn't know who was giving it. Or the other way, which I saw, is that he would look as if he's seeing the people. He didn't actually see the people, but it would be enough to have a chilling effect on swindlers so they wouldn't come. Then let's see back in the Gemara. He says, two lines from the bottom, Rabbi Chanina, there was a certain poor person that he would give four zuz every Friday. One day he sent his wife to give the money instead of himself. So the wife came back, says he doesn't need the money. She says, my chazit, what did you see? She says, Shami, she says, I heard, they said to him, the top line of Samachemaral, what are you eating with? So it means with tablecloths of silver or gold. But Rashi explains the top line of Rashi. Are you going to be eating with linen, white linen tablecloths or colored silk tablecloths? So the silver is the white linen tablecloths. The gold is the colored silk. So obviously, so back in the Gemara, Amar, Hainadamar of Lazar, so he says, if that's the case, in other words, he took it that indeed the person did not need the money and was, you know, misrepresenting himself. He says, well, that fits in with what Blazer says, that we should be grateful to like the tricksters, the swindlers, Shemalei Hain, but for them, otherwise we would be sinning every day. That if the poor person knows, if you don't give to the person, he calls out to Hashem, he'll have an Aveira. But now you could like sort of have a taina that, you know, that these swindlers are causing us not to give the money. It's not our fault. We're afraid that they're charlatans. So Vitani Ribhiya Barav Midifte, and Ribhiya Barav Midifte taught the following braisa, which Shubin Korach Omer. Shubin Korach says, if a person hides his eyes, you know, and doesn't give tzedakah, so it's like as if he's Obed Avodah Zarah. Says like, you know, be careful lest you have something belial, like means like not like irreligious in your heart. Saying now the pasuk is talking about the shnat shmita, is karvash shnat shmita. You want to lend the money, but they take it from there like a general admonition that you're not going to give tzedakah. But it uses the word belial. It says uktiv atam. This is both sukim in parashat Re'eh. It says yetsu anashim b'nei belial. Mikrbecha. In other words, people came out Belial and they encourage you to do Avodah Zarah. Now, the word Belial only shows up in Tanakh, but only shows up twice in Chumash. And the two places it shows up in Chumash are these two Pesukim. At least that's what Archo said. So, Malahalan Avodah Kuchavim. So, just like the second Pesuk is definitely talking about Avodah Zarah, Afkan Avodah Kuchavim. So, to hear, there's like an element of Avodah Zarah, like in Bab Kham Belial, like in other words, if you're not giving Thiani, it's like you're held culpable, like you were Ovid Avodah Zarah. Let me just do a few more lines, and I'll pause, and we'll digest, and we'll talk. You know, let me just divert for 1 minute on the second Tosfos, or the first Tosfos rather. Let's look at the first Tosfos on the top left hand corner. He says, so the wife says, I heard them asking him, do you want to have like the silver linen tablecloths or the the colored silk tablecloths? Now, from yesterday's Gemara, you may recall, there was an incident where, they came back and it was somebody he was giving staka to, and they reported that they were using wine to, like, you know, spread aroma in the house. One second, let me just find the line in the Gemara. Yeah, so this was six lines from the bottom on the previous Amud. He says, there was a certain Ani that Mar Ukva would give 400 zuz every Erev Yom Kippur. And one day he sent it with his son, and the son said to him, you don't need to send it to him. He says, what did you see? I saw that they're like spilling wine, old wine in the house to make it, you know, more fragrant. So he says, Amar Mephalik Bin Ohio. So he's so like finicky. He says, I Pino Shadrina Hele. So he doubled up the amount of money he was going to give to him. So here we see, why by Mar Ukva does he take it that it's the Ani? So like the Gemara learned, like De Machsro Sheikh Sarlo, you have to support the person on the standard that he's used to. And there he saw he was doing certain things, so he gave more. And here he said, gee, like, you know, so that he says, like the Ramai. So he says here, he says, Pinuk means like I'm very sensitive. I need a certain lifestyle. That's not Shayach. You know, it's the Shayach to like the fragrance in the house, maybe the food I'm eating. It's not Shayach to the tablecloths that I'm eating on. In other words, he says, Ela Vadai Ashir Haya. In other words, he wants to say that this person was definitely like a wealthy person. The way I understand Tosos, he's saying like this: is the idea of peanut means if a person is used to like a certain lifestyle. But peanut means like my creature comforts, a certain level of creature comforts. So creature comforts would be food, aroma, things in the house. But the silk tablecloths, that's not peanut. So he's saying that like he really was wealthy is really what he's saying. That's the way I got it from Tosafot. All right, let me wrap up this Gemara and then we'll see where we go. All right. So now around the 10th line down on Tzemachet Amud Aleph, Tanur Rabbanan, we learned the Braisa. A person like blinds his eye, not really blind, but he pretends that he has like a blind eye with an intent to defraud people to give him stucca. But Matzbet Bitno, he makes his stomach look like it's swelled. When people are suffering from malnutrition, their bellies swell. But Makapeh Kachoko, he causes his arm to shrivel. He says, "Eino niftar man olama an shivoli dekach." So in other words, so he's like trying to defraud people, try to induce them to give him money on false pretenses. So the Gemara says he won't leave the world until he actually suffers from those things. Makabot stakam in sarit lekach. If a person accepts stakam and he doesn't need it. So far, in the end, he will need it. Okay, Tanana Tam, we learn in the Mishnah Masechet Peah, that this is talking about a person, he wants to get the Ma'anot Aniyim, Leket Shicha and Peah. So Leket are like the stalks that the person, you know, has to leave in the field, and the Shicha, the bundle of Tavua that he's collected, and the Peah is the corner of the crops. So in order to be eligible for those matnot aniyim, a person cannot have, you know, on hand liquid assets of 200 zuz. So the Mishnah says that let's say he has other assets that he could sell, then he would have 200 zuz. So the Mishnah says, "Imachavim tolim kor beita." We don't force him to sell his house, make clay teshmisho, and his utensils in order to now have 200 zuz and not be eligible for the matnot aniyim. So the bottom line is, he doesn't have 200 zuz at hand, he's eligible. He says, below, so the Gemara says, is that true? We don't. But Tani, we learn a different price. If he was accustomed to using golden kalim vessels, so then we force him to take silver. So we think it's saying that he has to sell like the golden vessels, and then he'll have 200 zuz. And we're not going to let him. It was just the opposite of the previous mission. That's what we think. So Amar Rav Zvi Lo Kasha. So Rav Zvi says there's no contradiction between the Mishnah and the Braisa. Habimita v'shulchan b'kosod uka'arod. By the last Braisa is talking about mita v'shulchan, meaning we think, the Gemara is going to reject this in a bit, but we think that, let's say he's got like a very luxurious bed or a very luxurious table, so that we would force him to sell and to get the money. He says habakosod uka'arod, but the cups and the plates we don't force him to sell. So the Gemara says, "Maishna kosod ukarot delo." Why would we not force him to sell, cups and plates? The amar me easily, because he says, like the ones you want me to buy, I find very repulsive. I can't stand them. So the Gemara says, "Me to the shulchanami amar lo makabel levoy." But he can say the same thing by the bed and the shulchan. I don't care that. So the Gemara says, "Scratch that hesber." So amar rabba bered the rabba b'machresha the kasba. So Rabba the son of Rabba says, indeed, we don't force somebody to sell assets to get 200 zuz, but if he has a machresha, the kasba, so here the first shot is like a golden plow, which is not like a personal item, but it's just, like a tool of trade, but is excessively luxurious, that we would force them. And that's what clay zahab, clay kesef, and the clay nechoshet would be. Or machresha, the kasba, could be like a silver comb to comb one's hair in the bathhouse. And that's so excessively luxurious that we would force him to sell. That's one shot. So in other words, so the shot in the mission would be that we don't force a person to sell items in order to get 200 zuz. If he doesn't have 200 zuz, he's eligible. But if the item is so luxurious, then we would force him to sell. Or the item is, sort of luxurious, but it's not a personal item. It's used like for business. Rapapa Amar Lokasha. Rapapa says, look, there's no contradiction between the Mishnah and the Braisa. The Mishnah indeed is telling us how Halakha Pasuk. We never force somebody to sell anything in order to get 200 zuz. If he doesn't have 200 zuz, he's eligible for the Manodonium. But Kan Kona Shibuli Gibui, Kan Lachar Shibuli Gibui. But the Braisa that says we force him to sell things, that's where he improperly collected matnodaniyam. In other words, he had enough money and he collected matnodaniyam. And now we the Bezdin want to come to, seize assets that were equal to what he took from the matnodaniyam, and now he doesn't have so many assets. So then we would force him to sell the clay zahav and the clay the kesef, and go down with that. Okay. Who's the questions, comments, and thoughts on anything I did so far? Everybody happy? All right. Let me do a little piece now from the that's it. You got the whole thing here ready, you'll say. All right. So the Gemara above interprets Basuk Patok Tiptaf Demach Sarov Shech Sarlo as meaning that one must provide the needy with all their essential needs. In addition to food and clothing, a poor person should be given a bed, a table, and other essentials, but there's no obligation to provide him with luxuries. The Gemara says, however, if a wealthy man who's accustomed to a high standard of living falls on hard times, it is a mitzvah to provide him with the comforts that he's accustomed to. Because for him, they are necessities. I always kind of wonder, what would happen if they had a fundraiser for somebody who lived in Kings Point, with a, pool, Rolls Royce, and everything else, and they want to support him at that lifestyle. So, indeed, the Gemara relates an incident in which Mar Ukba, philanthropic Amora, gave additional charity to a poor man after discovering they lived with certain extra comforts, because Mar Ukba felt that these were necessities for this man, since he was accustomed to them. So that's the way it was shot in the Tosfos. In other words, that was like his previous, creature comfort status. On the other hand, the Gemara cites the story in which Rav Chanina withheld charity from someone after discovering he lived in luxury. Tosfos explains in the case of Mar Ukba, the charity recipient, although accustomed to enjoying certain comforts, was really a poor man. Whereas in the case of Rav Chanina, the man was a fraud who feigned poverty, but was really not in need of charity. Yeah, but I must say, I'm not 100% sure how they figured that one was a fraud and one wasn't a fraud. So I'm not sure with this. One second. Let's see what he says here in the footnote. One second. Oh. Well, he says, if you look at the Me'iri, he says that the person really was poor initially, but he took so much stock of it, so he eventually had all the gold and silver or whatever. I don't know. So, but the point is that he really, He didn't need it. Rav Lazar remarked that we have to be grateful to the many phony paupers who abound because they save those who ignore the poor from violating a terrible sin as they provide them with an excuse for their behavior. Rav Yehuda and Baba Batra Daftet says, in Bokin Lizono, we do not investigate a beggar's background and credibility when giving him food. Rather, he is given food immediately. Today, Yeshua consequently contends that the proliferation of frauds do not justify one's refusal to feed a beggar. In other words, the person needs food. He says, rather, Rav Lazar is referring to the obligation of providing the pauper with Dei Masero, all that he lacks. If not for the many phony beggars, he would be obligated to provide every pauper with all his needs. Now, however, because of the many frauds, the person is justified in refusing to provide a pauper with Dei Masero, since his credibility is in doubt. Ideally, however, instead of sending a beggar on his way with only a token donation, claiming that he might be a fraud, one should make an effort to examine and inquire into his background so as to determine his legitimate needs. The Rama rules that a private individual is not obligated to provide Dei Masero full support to a pauper who approaches him. Rather, the case should be brought to the attention of the administrator of the public tzedakah fund, whose responsibility lies with the public at large. However, if there isn't sufficient public funds available, then wealthy private individuals who can afford to do so are obligated to provide Dei Masero for the poor. If you remember, yesterday's Gemara said, Afilu Sister Chobalav, Afilu Evid Larustafanav, even a horse to ride on, even a servant to run in front of the person. Okay, then, let's say again what? Hillel, right. Okay, now, let's just, I'll do one more piece with this stuff and then I gotta move on. Okay, the Shulchan Aruch rules that a wealthy person who starves himself and due to his stinginess won't buy food for himself is not permitted to take tzedakah. The Marashtam adds that it is obvious that there is no distinction between one who has the money to purchase food and refuses to use it and a person who does not have money to purchase food but can get a job that would give him the means to support himself. So in other words, if a person's got money, he's a fraud. If a person could easily get a job and he doesn't get a job, that's what he says. Neither one of these people is allowed to collect tzedakah, and the logic for this is obvious. Allowing a person to collect tzedakah, even though he has the ability to get a job, without any expectation that he would make an effort to get a job, creates an impossible burden for the community. There would be no incentive for poor people to work, since they could expect the wealthy people to provide them with their needs. In a short amount of time, the community would be faced with the circumstance that the need for tzedakah would far outweigh the available funds. Accordingly, Tshuva Shevet HaKahati writes that it is prohibited for a pauper who has the means to get a job to take tzedakah funds. Some note, however, that if the pauper has a wife and children, he should be given money for their sake, since there's no reason they should suffer because their husband or father won't get a job. Okay, now, the issue is, what about all the Talmidei Chachamim who are studying the Yeshiva not working? So Rav Moshe Feinstein notes that the Rama discusses the parameters of Yisachar's loan agreement in the halachas of Torah study rather than in the section of tzedakah. That was the Hilchot Tzedakah and Hilchot Talmud Torah. So in Hilchot Talmud Torah, so the Mechaber brings down the din, a person can set up a Yisachar Zvulun relationship where the person who's working is supporting the person who's studying Torah and then splitting the rewards. So the reason for this placement, explains Rav Moshe, is that it's not a stuck agreement because it can be arranged even with a person who has the means to get a job and earn his own living. In other words, Zvulun, Yisachar Zvulun relationship, in Achinami, he's talking about the Talmud Chacham might be able to get a job. Furthermore, there is no mitzvah tzedakah for a person who has property that he could use to support himself until he dips below the poverty level because there is no right to collect tzedakah for learning unless one is truly poor. Wait. He says, but furthermore, there's no mitzvah tzedakah. Yeah, but Yisachar is willing relationship. That look where you could set up. Okay. So that doesn't sound like it's tzedakah. It doesn't sound like that sounds like a business venture. Yeah. All right. Any questions, comments, thoughts? Otherwise, I'm moving on. Say again, what? Yeah. From master money, but the Yisachar Zvulun. I'm not 100% sure, but it doesn't sound like from here that it could. What I should ask him? Oh, okay, so believe that, or if I get an opportunity, I'll try to ask him about that. Okay, I'm going to. Everybody good? Okay, so I'm moving on. All right. Okay, so all right, we're up to the next Mishnah on Samachet Amud Aleph, 68A, the next Mishnah. Everybody with me? Okay, so Manitini Tomashe Siyata Ima Wachecha Midaita. So this is talking about a girl's an orphan. The father's not in the picture, he's dead. So we know that the Chachamim were mitakin that the mother or brothers could marry her off. So Tomashe Siyata Ima Wachecha Midaita, with her consent, she's a katana. The Kachel of Meo Bachamishim Zuz, but they gave her kind of a stingy dowry. The Gemara in the last Mishnah you had yesterday learned that the minimum dowry is 50. 50 Zuz, they gave her 150, but it's like a very stingy dowry. when she becomes older, she can sue them or, you know, seek to get them the appropriate amount, which we'll see in the Gemara comes out to be 10% of the estate. He says, Alosimi Adam Mashru'i Lina Tema. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Misira Bada Rishona, if the father married off the first daughter when he was still alive, Lina Tema Shniak Dershon Salam Rishona. So according to that, Rabbi Yehuda, we don't follow a standard equation amount, unless we have to evaluate the person. So if the father married off daughter number one and gave her, you know, $50,000 for her dowry, even though now he's not alive anymore, then it's reasonable of us to assume that that would be the amount that he would give to daughter number two. But Chachamim Omrim, Chachamim Shadam Ani Veheshir, O Ashir Veheni. Chachamim say, sometimes a person's poor becomes wealthy, wealth becomes poor. So it sounds like working wealthy, but the Gemara is going to explain, it means that a person, Ani and Ashir mean, is he generous or stingy, is what the Gemara says. It means that a person is stingy and then becomes more generous, or he's generous and becomes more stingy. In other words, the fact that he gave daughter number one doesn't mean he would give it for daughter number two, even if he were alive. He says, Ela shamin ha-nechasim v'notnimla. We give it based on the equation of 10% of the estate is what we give, a set amount. So basically in the Mishnah, basic point of the Mishnah to remember is that the Chachamim say we have an exact amount, which is 10%. And Rabbi Yehuda says we're going to evaluate, you know, where the person, what he would have done. All right, any questions, comments, thoughts?
I do.
Okay, 1 second. Wait. You'll say first, and we'll get to you. Which Tana Kam? Which Tana Kam? Which line?
Yeah, that's the line.
Yeah, that's the line. Yeah, so that, of course, the way Rashi learns, that sounds like the same thing as the Chachamim. Right, that sounds, because Rashi says, Barashuli Tainla, Yisra Nechasim, Rashi says. So it sounds like the way Rashi's learning, that's the same. Okay, what do you got for me, Fern?
Why is it she who is pursuing the action? Isn't it the Baal that gets the dowry? In other words, doesn't he have standing to sue? Is it that she wants to extract more for the ketubah?
No, well, the dowry is, as you know, is a gift from her parents or her father to the future groom, but
so why is she suing? He should sue.
He has no standing. He has no standing to demand a larger dowry. In other words, especially when he married her already. So once he's married, that's it. It's his right. That's the deal. Here's the package. Take it or leave it. But she has the right. She has the right to say, you know, there was a piece of this estate that should have been marked off my dowry. I'd like it, you know, to come in. All right, I'm going to move on unless anybody has other questions. All right, let's see back on the Gemara. So the Gemara says, okay, now we're around 6 lines above where it gets medium light. So Amar Shmuel Parnasa Shamim Ba'av. Now we'll put this into the Mishnah, but put the Mishnah on one side right now. Shmuel says Parnasa means like for the dowry. For the Parnasa Shamim Ba'av, we make an evaluation about what the father would have given. So it sounds like Tana Rebbe Huda. Although we would assume that Shmuel goes like the Chachamim, so it's hard to fit it in. So the Gemara says, Meitei, we ask a kash against Shmuel. That the daughters are supported, we'll see what it's talking about, from their father's estate, means when they're orphans. He says, we don't say, if the father were alive, he'd give X, Y, or Z to the daughter. We evaluate, we praise the property, and we give her. So the Gemara says, my love, partner, said about, is it not that the Bryce is speaking about a dowry? So we think that this Bryce is talking about a dowry, and we think that it's saying that you're going to give according to a set amount, which we know is 10%, but that's what we think. That would be a kasha against Shmuel. So Amram Nachman Bar Yitzchak, lo, parnas ad atzma. So Nachman Bar Yitzchak said, no, that's got nothing to do with that. That's not talking about a dowry. This is talking about her support after the father's dead, and then she's entitled to support from the estate, and that's what it's talking about. So the Gemara says, hanizon or parnas tokatani, but the Braisa has two verbs. One verb, nizonot, sustenance, it sounds like that's her support. With parnasot, that sounds like the dowry. So my la b'chat parnasot abal, b'chat parnasot atzma. Is it not that one is talking about parnasot atzma, which would be nizonot, and one is talking about the baal, which is parnasot, in which case the question would still be in place. Lo, edi parnasot atzma. The Gemara says, no, I say both are talking about her support. Lo kasha, why the two verbs? Ha b'chil shtia, one is talking about what she eats and drinks, that's nizonot. B'ha, the Labusha of a Kisuya, that's talking about her clothing, and Kisuya is like the covering, like the blankets and the mattresses at night. So again, so we asked the question against Shmuel. Shmuel says we evaluate what the father would have given, and we have to fit that into the Mishnah, which we don't know where it fits. But when the Gemara asked Kasha from the Brice against Shmuel, but the Gemara said this Brice is not talking about a dowry. The Brice is just talking about her support after the father dies from the estate. I'm just going to do a little more, then I'll pause, okay? So the Gemara says on the second medium wide line, Tanan, we learned in our Mishnah, now we're connecting it up to our Mishnah. But Chachamim Omrim, Pamim Shadam Ani Beheshir, sometimes a person is poor and becomes wealthy, or Ashir Beheni, where he's wealthy and becomes poor. El Shamin An Nachasim and In Law. We just evaluate the estate and we give her accordingly. So Mani Ani Yumayashir, what does the Tanan mean by poor and wealthy? He'll be say pshuto k'mashmao that he's got a lot of money or very little money. Then the implication would be that the Tanakama would say that he gets the same amount. It was that the Tanakama said that if the father gave to one daughter, he'll give the second daughter. Lechora is saying that even if the financial circumstances change, it would be the same. But how lately? But he doesn't have the assets. How could that be? The love, ani, ani badad, ashir, ashir badad. The Gemara says, no, what does ani and ashir mean? Ani means like your disposition. Are you a stingy disposition or a generous disposition? He says, v'ketani, shamin and lechasim v'notinla. And we learn that we evaluate the property and we give her accordingly. Alma lawazlin batar umdina. So it means within the sheet of the Chachamim, we're trying to clarify the sheet of the Chachamim in the Mishnah. So in the Mishnah, the Chachamim said, last three lines of the Mishnah, Pamim Shadam Ani Beheshir. In other words, regardless of what he gave to daughter number one, sometimes a person could be stingy and then become more generous. He says, oh, Ashir Beheni, or he was generous and become more stingy. So you don't know what he, in terms of what he gave to daughter number one, what he would give to daughter number two. So rather, what do? We may evaluate the estate and we give her a set amount, 10%. That's what the Chachamim hold. So the Gemara says, so back in the Gemara, the first white line, so we see we do not follow an appraisal about what the father would give. That's what the Chachamim hold. And we would assume that Shmuel would go like the sheet of the Chachamim. So we're just typing up the sheet of the Chachamim. The Chachamim seem to hold as a set amount based on a rip. That's it. But you have to the Shmuel who? You have to the Shmuel. So Shmuel's all up. So the Gemara says, who the mark Rabbi Yehuda? No, Shmuel was not following the Chachamim. Shmuel was going like the Tana Rabbi Yehuda. Tadnan, we learn the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, and we see Bada Rishona, if he married off daughter number one when the father was alive, you know, Tin Shnei Kederish and Tana Rishona, that he should give the daughter number two like he gave to the daughter number one. The name of Halachit Rabbi Yehuda, so that's what he means, Shaman. In other words, we evaluate what the father would have given under these circumstances. Obviously, if there's no money left in the estate, you can't. But what would the father under these circumstances have given? And we'll judge it based on what he gave to daughter number one. So that's Shmuel, and that's the way the Rabbi Yehuda holds in the Mishnah, and that's the way Shmuel follows. The name Allah Rabbi Yehuda, why doesn't Shmuel just say the Allah follows Rabbi Yehuda, make it simple? The Amar Allah Rabbi Yehuda, if the Gemara would have said the Halacha, or if Shmuel would have said the Allah follows Rabbi Yehuda, Havamina Dafka Hisiya, I would have said that's only true if the father married off daughter number one. Gali Daite, because in such a fashion he reveals what his disposition would be. Havar Lo Hisiya Lo, but if he didn't marry off daughter number one, I would say you don't know what he would give. So Kamash Malan, Tamaz Rabbi Yehuda is Lina Batar Umdana. So Shmuel is teaching me that within Rabbi Yehuda, we're going to make an assessment about what the father would have given. He says, Loshana Hisiya, it doesn't make a difference if the father married off daughter number one, Loshana Lo Hisiya, or if he didn't marry off daughter number one. Whereas we're going to make a judgment as to what he would have given. He says, had he been alive. V'hai Dikatani Hisiya, and the fact that the Tana of the Mishnah says Hisiya, that he married off daughter number one, he says in Hisid Habara Rishona, the fact that he teaches that he married daughter number one, Loziachakul Kandrabanan, is just to teach you the scope of the Chachamim who disagree with Rabbi Yehuda, the Avagav Visiya, that even though he married off one daughter, Bigali Daite, and he clearly revealed what he was going to give daughter number one, because he gave daughter number one, like he gave daughter number one $50,000. There's no question about that. Let's say he was generous. So Loaz Lin Batar Umdina. Notwithstanding that, the Chachamim hold, we're not going to follow the assessment with daughter number two, when the father is dead. But Shmuel Rabbi Yehuda holds, and Shmuel follows Rabbi Yehuda, we do make an assessment. No, we would still make an assessment based on what we know him, his disposition. That's he follows Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda would say we would make an estimate based on his disposition, what he would give it. Let me just do a few more lines and I'll pause. Another six lines. So Amalei Rabbi Rav Chista, Darshin and Mishmech. So Rabbi says, Rav Chista, we darshin in your name, halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda. So from the fact that, so this is that the halacha follows Rabbi Yehuda. So Amalei, Yehi Rabba, kol kihani milei ma'alita t'rishu b'shma. Hopefully, all wonderful things like this, you should also darshan in my name. Now, from the fact that Rabba asked Rav Chista that you darshan halacha, like Rabbi Yehuda, we take it that Rabba also follows Rabbi Yehuda. Well, me and Rabba Hachi, did Rabba really say that we'll follow the Tana Rabbi Yehuda? Ba'atanya, we learned the Braisa, Rabbi Omer. Now, we didn't have Rabbi up to now. Now we have Rabbi. Ba'atan Yizonit Mina Achim, if a daughter is being supported by the brothers, in other words, the father's dead, now she's being supported by the brothers, they'll tell him Easter Nechasim. She gets 10% of the estate for her dowry. That's what Rabbi says. But I'm a Rabbi, he'll cut to Rabbi. And Rabbi says, Allah follows Rabbi. So here we have one line, we think Rabbi holds Allah is like Shmuel. Shmuel says Allah is like Rabbi Yehuda. And then we have Rabbi. Rabbi says you get 10%. That sounds like the Chachamim. And Rabbi says Allah is like Rabbi. So which way is it going? Does Rabbi hold like Rabbi Yehuda's? Okay. I'm looking at the clock. That's why I'm speeding it up. Okay. I'm just doing three more lines and I'll pause. Okay. So one hand, we have a statement. The Rabbi seems to say the Allah follows Rabbi Yehuda. On the other hand, we have a statement that Rabbi says Allah follows Rabbi, and Rabbi says give her straight 10%, which sounds like the Chachamim. So no kasha. There's no contradiction between the two statements of Rabbi. Rabbi really holds we make an assessment about what the father's disposition would have been had he been alive, which is the same as what Shmuel says. He says, but ha-da-amine, one, we're able to make such an assessment, then we'll make the assessment. But if we can't make an assessment, and look at Rashi. Rashi says six lines from the bottom. He says, "Haki yersin lo kasha hadamine hadlo amine hadamar Rebbe Yisra nechasim b'dlo amine la'av." We weren't able to assess what the father would have given. Shlo garbinin. The father never lived in our neighborhood. We don't know him. Lo amanu asof da'ato imvatren kamsim. We're not able to determine whether he was generous, stingy. We don't know. He wasn't around here. None of us knew him. So he says four lines from the bottom. That's logical, what we just said. The Amar Rabbi Barava says, Masa v'natam Rebbe echad mishneim asar v'nechasim. It was an instance where Rebbe himself, who says you give Isar nechasim 10%, it was a case where Rebbe awarded the daughter 1/12 of the estate for her dowry. So Kashan Adari, so within Rebbe, I have a contradiction in statements. Here I have one statement from Rebbe, give 10%. Another statement from Rebbe, where he gave 1/12 with less, one less. So Ella Lav Shromina Hadamine, that was where they were able to evaluate the father. He wasn't so generous, so they gave him 1/12. So Hadalamine, where they weren't able to evaluate him, so the default is 10%. Shromina. Okay, let's just summarize what we did, then we'll take questions, comments, and thoughts. So, all right, I'm doing the best I can, but within the time, we have a certain amount to do. And if I don't finish the doc, you're not going to be happy. Okay, now, the good thing about this is you can listen 100 times online. Okay, now, So in the Mishnah, we said that, a father would give a certain amount for dowry. And let's say you have a yatoma, the father's not alive anymore. So how do we evaluate what to give? So it's machloket between Rabbi Huda and the Chachamim. So Rabbi Huda says we evaluate what the father would have given. And that's the way Shmuel paskins, and then proceed accordingly. And let's say if he married off one daughter, then we have proof positive for what he would have given. And then the Chachamim say, we're always going to give 10%. Then we were introduced, though, to it, in essence, a sort of a third opinion of the Gemara. Rebbe says that if we're able to evaluate, then we're going to do it that way. But if we can't evaluate, then we're going to do 10%. Okay, who's got questions, comes to us, anything?
What's the source for the 10% is number one?
Yeah.
And number two... Yes. I know you said if the estate doesn't have, you can't give, but there seems to not be a real discussion of the fact that you no longer have an employed father who's bringing in money.
That's true. But now, as far as the 10%, I don't know where the 10% comes. The only thing that comes to mind is Maaser Ksavim. That's what comes to mind. But otherwise, I don't know where the 10% is coming from. And in terms of the father not being alive, so we'll do with what we got. In other words, we'll see the next Gemara. Let me go to the next Gemara, and then we'll take up a little bit. Okay. We will if we can't evaluate then 10%. Okay. Well, sort of, because that might be what Rebbe Yehuda himself holds. Because Rebbe Yehuda says, you know, if we can evaluate, we will. But what would Rebbe Yehuda hold if we can't evaluate? So Rebbe Yehuda might agree with that as well. Lechora, they're all going with Rebbe Yehuda. That's the way I interpret it. Okay.
And I assume that if there are 11 daughters left,
It's coming up. Just one minute. Wait. Hold your horses. Okay. Okay. Three lines on the bottom. Okay. Ready? Okay. Now, Gufa. So earlier in the Gemara we quoted, I'm a Rebbe. Because the daughter is being supported by the brothers, but tell it Easter and Chasim. She gets 1/10% of the estate will be her dowry. Again, remember we did Rebbe above. Remember what we said about Rebbe? If we can't evaluate, we do 10%, right? Okay. So it says here, so Amrullah the Rebbe. So he said to Rebbe, Lidvarecha, according to you, if a man has 10 daughters, Uben, and one son, in other words, each daughter is going to take 10% of the pie. When they get married, the son's going to be left with nothing. So Amar Lahan, Kakan Yomer. Rebbe said, this is what I say. Rishonon Otel at Yisra Nechasim. Daughter number one gets 10%. So imagine, let's say, you have $100,000. The daughter number one gets $10,000. Shnia B'mashashira. Then daughter number two gets 10%. Of what remains. So 10% of what remains would be $9,000. It says, Ushlishi b'mashira. Then daughter number three gets 10% of what remains. So that would be, $8,100. He says, and then afterwards, after everybody's gotten their 10%, they pull all the 10% together and divide it equally. Now, it comes out, and the article does the mathematics. It works out that roughly the daughters would get 65% of the estate because the slices keep getting thinner and thinner. So at the 10 daughters would get 65% of the estate. So when they divide it equally, each daughter would get 6.5% of the estate. That's the way the math works out. So the Gemara says on the top line of Samachem Beit, what do you mean? It says, what does it mean? Like 10%, 10%, 10%, you know, of what's left. He says, everybody's just taking He says, right. So why do they have to pool it and redivide it? Each one was getting what was coming to them. So Haki Kamar, Imbau Kulam Linasei Ka'achad, if they all get married around the same period of time, Cholkot B'Shava, they all divided equally. So it doesn't mean typically it would be done that way, but if like they're all, be that way, that's the way we would do it. So Messiah the Rabbatna, this seems to support Rabbatna, the Amar Rabbatna, in Ba'ulina Sekulam Kachat, note lo Isur Echad. If they all come at the same time, they get one Isur, it sounds like 10%. Isur Echad Salkataita, when I think 10%, and a note load Isur Ki Echad. They get their 10%, it's like one, they each get the 10%, and then they divide it up, and then they redivide it up, and that's the way that works out. Okay, now, what do you got for me, Fern? Any questions now on the 10%? What's the deal?
No, but you didn't get into a 12th daughter.
About what's again?
You didn't get into over 12 daughters, yeah. But I guess it could work into this man.
Yeah, 12 daughters. No wonder he died.
Why 12 daughters? Why would I need 12? And we did 10. The same idea. Why would I need 12?
No, I see how it's going to work out. If you have more than 10...
Whatever the number, you
never
have 20 daughters. Okay, that's
what it is. 12 daughters, no wonder
he died. No wonder he died, right?
No wonder he died. Okay. So, all right, let's take a look. I'm gonna go further in the Gemara now. Everybody ready? Okay, we're on line 6 and Tan Rabbanan. Everybody with me? I'm going to try to do it, but I'm worried about getting through the daf. Okay, so now line 6. So Tan Rabbanan, this is a little tricky, this Gemara. Habanot ben bagru ad shlo nisu. There was daughters. They're talking about the father who was dead. So Habanot ben bagru ad shlo nisu, whether they aged out, bagru, you know, 12 and a half, before they got married. Ben nisu ad shlo bagru, or they got married before they became bogrot, ibdu mizonotayan. So their right to mizonot terminates. That's pretty clear. Rashi brings down, if you look at Rashi in the 10th narrow line, Ibdu Mazonotayan, Shkaka Tablahem, Oad Tibagran, Oad Lachlan Gubran. The husband wrote in the Ksuba, or it's a Tanai Ksuba, we learned earlier in the Masechet, it's a Tanai Ksuba, that I'll support your daughters until they become bogrot or until they're married off. So the earlier of either one of those eventualities, then that's the end of the mizonot. He says, but then back in the Gemara, below ibdu parnasatan to the Rebbe, but they don't lose the right to a dowry. In other words, the right to the dowry, in other words, even if the girl becomes a bogaret, she still has a right to that dowry. Or even if she, let's say, was married off when she was a nara, she could still sue later for the amount that she wasn't given. In other words, she feels, in other words, if the father was dead, she hasn't waived her rights to the full dowry of 10%. Rav Shimon Elazar Omer, the town Rav Shimon Elazar says, Af ibdu parnasatan. Rav Shimon Elazar says they lost the right to the dowry. In other words, if the daughter's married off as a nara, or she's a bogaret, then she loses the right to the dowry. If it's katana, she doesn't lose it, but they lose parnasatan. So Ketzad Hinoso, so we're around line 8 on some kind of base. So Ketzad Hinoso, what should they do to preserve their rights according to the Tanur of Shimon Lazar? Sokro Lehen Balim, they hire husbands. In other words, they put a financial incentive, you know, for anybody who marries them. Motzin Lehen Parnasatan. And then as a result of that, they'll be able to get their dowry. In other words, they won't lose the dowry because, in other words, they'll get married off early. And they'll get the dowry, and then that'll preserve the rights. That's the right because before the bogrot, and there was the when they're still tanot, right? He says, "Sokel balim, look at Rashi. Shesu otan adshel yibagru, and before they become bogrot, umotzim lahem parnasatam, and then they'll be able to get the dowry." Okay, so that's the machloket now between Rebbe and Rav Shimon Elazar. Whether they lose the right to the dowry when they're bogrot or when they're married and they're a nara and they don't get the full dowry, according to Rebbe, their rights are still preserved and they can sue for it later on. But for laws, they're going to lose it. The only way to preserve the rights is to get them married off early, and then they have the right to the dowry. So Amar Rav Nachman, Rav Nachman says, Amar Lihuna, I assume it means Rav Huna said to me, Hilcha Taka Rebbe. The Lacha follows Rebbe with respect to this. So according to Rebbe, the rights are preserved. Okay, Eitbe Rav Rav Nachman. So Rava poses the following question to Rav Nachman, and this is from our Mishnah. It says Yitoma Shisiata Imo Acheha. If you have an orphan that was married off by her mother or her brothers, Midaita, with her knowledge and consent, the Katfu Labameo become Mishim Zuz, and they gave her like a very stingy dowry of 50 or 100 Zuz. Yicholim Mishitag Dilotzimi Adam Mashruilinatena. So she could sue for the shortfall later on when she gets older. So the Gemara deduces from that, or Rabba deduces from it, Tama Diktana. She's a katana in that case in the Mishnah. So the katana, when she got shortchanged, she could sue for the shortfall in the dowry. Hagidola Bitra, but if she's Gedola, Rashi learns like a Nara, then she can kiss it goodbye. According to Rebbe, the rights are never waived, and yet in the Mishnah, and Rebbe is the who edited the Mishnayot. So Rebbe, in other words, Rebbe, we think, is editing the Mishnayot, and he's editing the Mishnayot in accordance with Shimon Elazar, that the rights disappear. In other words, if you're a Nara and you get married, you're a Bogari, you lose your rights to the dowry later on. So from the fact that Rebbe put the Mishnah the way he did, makes us think that Rebbe himself was kosher from his opinion, and yet. Rav Nachman said, the Rav Huna said, the Lach follows Rebbe. So the Gemara says, lo kasha. There's no contradiction between Rebbe's opinion as stated in the Brisa above and the opinion that's stated in the Mishnah. Had the machoy, had lo machoy. When Rebbe said that the rights are preserved, but provided that she makes a protest before, in other words, like at the time she's getting married, she makes a protest, or before she becomes a bogeret, she makes a protest, say, I still expect my full dowry. Then her rights are preserved. The Mishnah that says only Katana gets it, that's where there was no protest. Hakinami Mustaber, that's logical. Dim Kane, because if we don't say that difference between whether you're Mocha or not Mocha, Kashid Rebbe is Rebbe. We're going to have a contradiction within statements of Rebbe. Never mind the Mishnah. We have Rebbe's statement in the Brisa, so now we're going to have another statement of Rebbe. Katani, we learn in the Brisa, Rebbe Omer, Bat Hanizoni Mina Achim, you have a daughter that's supported by the brothers, it means the father is dead. Notel at Easter Nechasim, she gets 10% of the estate as her dowry. That implies that only if she's supported from the estate. So she's supported from the estate before she becomes a bogeret. Einani Zonate, she's a Bogeret. So that would mean that a Bogeret does not get 10% of the estate. And yet Rebbe Abab said that Bogeret does get 10% of the estate. So Shani Zalo, Allah Shmuina Hadamachoi. So in the Bryce above, Rebbe was saying if she timely makes a protest, then that preserves her rights. Hadamachoi, if she doesn't make a timely protest, the kiss is goodbye. Shmamina. So from here, we can deduce that our explanation is correct. Let me just do a few more lines and I'll pause. So Amar Le Ravina Le Rava. So Ravina said to Rava, Amar Le Rava Adabar Rava Mishme. That Rav Adabar Rava said, in your name, Rava, Bagra, Ena Srich Lemcho. He said that, now, Rava, as far as we think, that he's following what Rebbe said. Remember, Rava is the one who said above, that Rav Nachman said that Rav Huna said the luck was like Rebbe. But then Rava said to Rav Nachman, he asked him all those questions. So we assume that Rava holds by this Hezber about Macha. So he says, but Rav Adabar Rava said in your name, Bagra, Ena Srich Lemcho. That if she's a Bulgarian, she doesn't have to protest, and yet her rights will be preserved. Nisei in the Srikhalam code. If she's married off, even if she's a Nara, she doesn't have to protest, her rights are preserved. Bagra Benisei, but if she's both a Bulgarian and she's a Nisua, Srikhalam code. So Gemara says, Miyamar, Rabbi Haki, did Rabbi really say that statement that we just said? But Efe Rabbi Rav Nachman. Rabbi is the one who posed the question to Rav Nachman from our Mishnah that we said the Lach is like Rebbe. And then we quoted in our Mishnah Yatoma about the whole thing with Yatoma. Bishani lei hadamachi adlomachi. And then he answered that if he protests, that's when Rebbe says the rights are preserved. And the Mishnah says she didn't protest. And yet here we're saying, according to Rava, and we assume that Rava, since he didn't disagree with that answer, goes along with it. And here Rava's saying you don't need to protest unless you're a Bogeret and you're a Nesua. So the Gemara says lo kasha. So the Gemara says there's no contradiction between the statements of Rava. If she's being supported from the estate, in other words, even if she's a Bogeret, but if she's still being supported from the estate, the fact that she doesn't protest cannot be construed against her. In other words, she may have, you know, inhibitions against making a protest to people who are giving her continued support. In other words, let's say the brothers are continuing to support her when she's a Bogeret. So if she doesn't protest, that doesn't mean she wants to waive her rights. She's just embarrassed to protest because they're giving her the weekly check or whatever, you know, things like that. But he says, but where she's not being supported to them, then she does have to make a timely protest. Okay, that's that piece.
And married.
So if she's a Bogeret and she's married, then even if she would be supported, there's so many factors against it that she's married and she's a Bogeret, then she still has to make a protest, yeah, to preserve her rights. Yeah, okay. All right.
I understand the relevance of protest to an entitlement.
Well, protest is preserving your rights. In other words, it's saying, I'm not waiving my rights to 10%. You know, you're not shoving me off. You know, I have my rights. If she goes along with it, it's like waiving her rights. That's what the Gemara is saying. In other words, you were marrying me off. I hope you enjoyed this wedding, dearest. We made a nice wedding for you. Here's the 50 zuz we're giving your husband. And she says, and we'll see you around.
How does she know that she has to protest? She doesn't do Davyomi.
Well, I don't know. It's like, you know what? What can I tell you? Yeah, she's got to get educated about these things. Okay. Now, okay. Yes, you're right. So Yosef said she's got to go to Davyomi. All right. Now.
But she wasn't allowed in those days.
Yeah, well, I tell you, well, let's not get into this topic, okay?
I'm glad to be here. All right.
Anyway, let's see back in the Gemara. Okay, we're 10 lines from the bottom. Okay, now, a little bit easier now. Amar Abuna Amar Rebbe, Parnasaina Kitznai Ketuba. Now, Parnasa means the dowry. The dowry is different than the Tznai Ketuba. So the Tznai Ketuba means those stipulations that are either put in the ksuba or were obligated to be placed in the ksuba that we learned in the Mishnah before. So the verse is my ina ketanai ksuba. What does Rebbe mean by that statement? So inema dilu parnasa tarfa mishabdei ketanai ksuba lo tarfa mishabdei. Maybe it means that the dowry should be collected from the chasim shubadim. The chasim shubadim were karka that the father had sold off, and she can collect her dowry from those properties, and the Tznai Ketuba, she can't collect it from it. In other words, like it says like I'll support the daughters after I'm dead and everything else. He says, my kamash palan. Why do I need Rebbe to teach me that? Kamas in b'choyom, it's an incident to every day, motzi leparnasa ve'imotzi lemezonot, that we're motzi from the chasa meshubadim for parnasa, for the dowry, and we're not motzi for mezonot. So in Akinami, it's true, but it's so self-evident from the common facts that happens all the time. I don't need Rebbe to tell me that. So again, what did Rebbe mean when he said Parnasa is not like a Tanai Ketuba? So we had one distinction, but we don't think that the distinction that we mentioned is so significant that Rebbe would even mention it or were necessary. Maybe he meant that the dowry you can collect even from metaltlin, from the movable objects that the father or the estate has, which Tanai Ketuba means gavya, and Tanai Ketuba you can only collect from the real property and not from the metaltlin. So the Gemara says that's an interesting distinction, but it's not true. The Rebbe, according to Rebbe, they're both collected from the both Karkaut and Metaltlin. The Tanya, Echan Echasim Shishim Lepraiot, and the Chasim Shishim Lepraiot is a code word for Karka, whether it's Karka, Echan Echasim Shein Lepraiot, which is a code word for Metaltlin, Motzin Lemazon Ha'isha, we can, you know, grab either one of those to support the wife, Ulabanot, the Rebbe. So the both for the mezonot, and they're certainly good for the parnasa. So that's not what the distinction he made. See, let me go back one sentence. Right. Right. So the inachinami. So even the Tanai Ketuba is it can be collected from the metaltolin. So he says here. Ella, so now our third shot at it. Ella, my parnasa in a Tanai Ketuba with the Tanya, like the answer we learned in the Brisa. Ha Omer, a person says on his deathbed, I don't want my daughters to be supported from my estate. Ain't shomin lo. They won't listen to him because he's obligated to support them. If I say I don't want my daughters to get a dowry from my estate, Shomimlo, then we have to listen to him. Shaparnasa in the Tanai Ketuba. Then look at Rashi. He says, I'll do the last four lines in Rashi. So in other words, by law, it's Tanai Ketuba, I have to support my daughters. So the support definitely has to come from the Nechasim. But I parnasu Shomimlo, but if I say I don't want the dowry to come from it, Shaparnasa in the Chovalav Tanai Ketuba. That's not his obligation once he's dead, or the estate, Ella Choval Yitomimu. In other words, that becomes an obligation that the heirs have to bear. Heichad Lo Tzidahav Shlo Parnasam, where the father did not direct that they should not give him, not give a parnasa. So one second. Give me one second. Right. So he says in footnote 34. He says, the stipulation of the super obligation of the father, by contrast, the dowry provisions accompanying the heirs, and he found the father to make instructions to the contrary. So anyway, the bottom line is that, this, so he says, ain't the Tanai Ketuba, the Parnasa not like the Tanai Ketuba, the Parnasa, that's up to the heirs to figure out. So if the father says, I don't want my daughters to be supported in my estate, that's within his prerogative to say that, and then it's up to the heirs to handle it how they want afterwards. But in other words, the father is free to say, I don't want my daughters to be get a dowry from my estate. It's got to do the support.
Okay.
All right. We'll pull a day. One second.